This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Side of the net, Andrew Tuck centered it 5 to Howard Tuck. A shot, he scores!
Back in 1991, as a member of the Buffalo Sabres, not the Winnipeg Jets, I'll point out, that was Dale Hawerchuk scoring his 1,000th career point for the team in upstate New York. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We're with you for the next 3 hours. We're all about the Winnipeg Jets. We're all about the Stanley Cup playoffs. But, of course, we start today with the news that has rocked the city of Winnipeg, the province of Manitoba, the hockey world in general, the untimely, unfortunate, and tragic passing of earlier this week of Winnipeg Jets icon, Hockey Hall of Fame icon, Team Canada icon, Dale Hawerchuk. Ezzy, good morning. Nice to see you first on the Saturday morning.
Good morning. Nice to see you too. Yeah.
But the news when it came out earlier this week was, I mean, it was
really sad.
Really sad.
I mean, there's no other word you can really use, Drew, when you're talking about this news, right? We knew that Dale's cancer had come back, and we knew that that was not good. But when that news came out earlier this week, you know, I was personally choked up. I think a lot of people were choked up. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, 1991 is when Hawerchuk, you know, he registered his 1,000th point with Buffalo. But you're talking about he was drafted, you know, the year you were born. He was drafted the year before I was born.
Yeah.
And when you think about the Jets and you think about especially that era of the Jets 1.0, obviously, you know, Timu Solani is someone who comes to mind, you know, for the rookie goal scoring record. But long before that, in the early 80s, it was Dale Hawerchuk. So this was someone that, you know, everybody in our generation and close to our generation, that's who we looked up to. I mean, Hawerchuk was synonymous with the Jets. So it was just incredibly sad news. It caught a lot of people unexpected, even though, as we mentioned, you know, we knew that, you know, the cancer had come back. But just, you know, we feel so bad for the Hawerchuk family because, you know, he had a lot of great years left. And, you know, it's always sad when someone dies that young.
Absolutely. And you know, we were talking about this off air, and it's sort of, you know, ironic's not the right word, but, you know, in passing, he got far more credit than he ever did while he was a player. Because, you know, and we've all heard it over the years, for, you know, playing in the shadow of Wayne Gretzky, never being able to get past Gretzky, playing in the shadow, you know, to a lesser extent, of course, because Lemieux was in Pittsburgh. But, you know, he was never given his just rewards and his just dessert for the player that he was while he was a member of the Winnipeg Jets. And the fantastic player, one of the best players in the world at that time. And for, you know, much of the 80s, for, you know, the decade of the 80s and the early 90s, and then, of course, the degenerative hip condition, which cost him sort of the twilight of his career after, you know, you remember he went to St. Louis and then Philadelphia briefly. You know, he was always overlooked. And until his passing, and this isn't, you know, a unique situation, this is what happens oftentimes, is that it takes somebody no longer being here to fully get the appreciation for the player that he was, for the fantastic athlete that he was, for the great statesman for the game of hockey that he was. But that disrespect, and, you know, disrespect's a strong word, but the go with it here, that continued even after he was retired. You remember, he wasn't elected to the Hockey Hall of Fame on his first chance, which is one of the biggest black marks for the Hockey Hall of Fame, an organization that I'm frequently quite critical of because it's such an old boys club and it's so hidden and it's so secret and everything else. You remember back in 2000 when he was in, that he was overlooked, and then I believe he was inducted in 2001, which is, you know, which is a shame. This is a guy who had the third most points in the NHL in the 1980s. There was no question he was a first ballot Hall of Famer, and he was overlooked. And why was he overlooked? Well, he played his career in Winnipeg. He played his career in Buffalo, both of which aren't big markets. you know, he wasn't ever able to get the Jets past the Edmonton Oilers in the playoffs. He wasn't able to get the Sabres. You know, they got to the playoffs every year he was in Buffalo, and I think they won a round against the Boston Bruins, if I recall correctly, back in the early 90s.
Howard Chuck never had that playoff success,
yeah,
at all. And, you know, you mentioned, Drew, that he had, you know, the third most points of that era. Mm-hmm. He has the 20th most points of all time.
Wasn't named to the NHL's all-time 100 list.
But just think about that, right? Like, of all the players that have ever played in the NHL, he's 20th all-time.
Yeah.
Right? Just over 1,400 career points. And I think he had 6 100-point seasons, and I think he was around 10 90-point seasons, if I'm not mistaken. I'd have to go and double-check, but I know that he had 6 100-point seasons. So, yeah, you're talking about it's interesting that you bring up the points because, you know, I texted my dad after Ducky died, and I said, you know, really sad news, and, you know, my dad responded yes, and then, you know, his response text was he was the third greatest center of that era. Right. And you mentioned Gretzky and Lemieux,
yeah,
and you're talking about the high flying 80s, right? Like arguably the golden days of the NHL, right? Like a lot of people, I mean, some people think, you know, the 1970s Montreal Canadiens,
well, they were
1980s.
The 70s Canadiens were probably the biggest dynasty.
Yes.
I mean, right. You know, you could argue about, yeah, the Oilers, of course.
But you've got the Islanders with Bossy, yeah, and then you've got, you know, obviously the Gretzky, Messier, Curry Oilers.
It wasn't a 16 league anymore. It wasn't even,
right,
a 16, right, team league. It was a 24 team league.
Right.
It was, you know, certainly on the runway to the modern NHL that we,
right,
see today.
And you make a good point. Absolutely, Howard Chuck should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's in, so, you know, we don't have to, you know, debate that too much. But I agree. Hindsight is 2020. He absolutely should have been in the first year, similar to Jerome Iginla, right? Like similar to Marty Brodeur, one of the best goalies of all time. Absolutely. Howard Chuck, I think, was underrated for all of those good years that he had, and we know why that is. You mentioned it because of, you know, Gretzky and Lemieux and those, you know, dominant Oilers teams, but it's almost fitting that a player like Dale Hawerchuk, because of his personality, right? Like,
sure,
his personality was very
understated,
similar. Absolutely. Like,
not necessarily seeking out the limelight, happy, you know, happy in Winnipeg, happy to come back to Manitoba and to his cottage in Gimli in the summers. You know, very down to earth. There were no airs about Dale Hawerchuk.
No.
There was no, you know, Dale Hawerchuk wasn't going to go out, and this isn't a shot at Gretzky, but he wasn't going to go out and become a wine expert and have his own vintage of wine that he was going to sell, after his career was coming to an end.
No, I agree with that. And I think, you know, when you look back at Dale Hawerchuk's life, that is his lasting legacy, right? It's the type of person that he was. It's almost like, you know, his time as the GM and the head coach of the Barry Colts,
sure,
was almost just as important as his Hall of Fame career, right? When you look back at all of those players he developed, right? Like, we know Mark Scheifele, but there's,
yeah,
a long list of players that played in Barry, right? Like Tanner Pearson, Kevin LeBanc. Like, we can go on and on and on.
Svechnikov. Mangiapane.
Oh, there's
all those guys who score. I mean,
yeah,
Mangiapane scoring on the, yeah, day of, I think, well, Svechnikov scored that day
yeah,
as well.
The Barry Colts are a dynasty, right? Like,
yeah,
they are one of those OHL dynasties. Hawerchuk has a lot to do with that. So, I mean, when you look back at his life and his hockey career, I mean, it's just incredible. And he meant so much to so many people, not just here in Winnipeg, not just here in Manitoba or Canada, in the U.S. as well, across the hockey world. Like, people associate, we talked about it earlier, a lot of people associate, you know, Teemu Selänne with Winnipeg. But long before Teemu Selänne, it was Dale Hawerchuk.
And I think
Dale Hawerchuk will always be synonymous with this city and this province, and he was such a great representative for this city and province, and I think that's why it was so sad when he died, because he meant so many things to so many people, and we just wish he could have stayed much longer.
Yeah, absolutely. And grow old and, you know, have grandchildren at his knee listening to his tales of hockey glory and everything else. And it is absolutely tragic when anyone, you know, that age, you know, in their 50s with the, you know, still so much life to live, you know, anytime anybody passes away, it's obviously a sad moment. You know, you talk about Teemu, and I think the difference between Hawerchuk and Teemu, and I mean, Teemu's been a tremendous ambassador, of course, for Winnipeg, and this isn't, again, any sort of negative comment. I don't want it to be construed that way.
I don't think you can say anything negative about Selänne at this point.
You really can't. I mean, what is the worst thing you could ever say about Teemu is he drove his car too fast in the off season in Finland. I mean, that's hardly a negative comment. But, you know,
he can afford the fines.
He can afford the fines, no question. Hawerchuk was, you know, a decade plus.
Yeah.
Teemu was, I mean, people forget about it because of the impact it had, but it was just almost, it was such a brief spurt.
Yeah.
His career was tremendous and lasted, you know.
Two and a half years.
That's all it was.
Solani was here for 2.5 years.
That magical year here,
yeah,
where he broke Bossy's record and everything else. It was that year was just so magical, and then he was gone almost just as quickly. He had the injury the year
as
after.
As quickly as you could say Oleg Tverdovsky.
Right, or Chad Kilger, but Oleg Tverdovsky's got more syllables in it. But, you know, with Howardchuk, it was that lengthy time where he was with the Jets in ups and downs and sort of went through the battles with the team. And I don't know if you saw the video of Rick Bonus going out on the bench prior to the game, where he got emotional looking up at the tribute. Of course, Rick Bonus was his first coach back here in the early 80s. And you can't talk about Dale Hawerchuk without talking about 87.
Yep.
1987.
Yep.
Not Sidney Crosby in this case, but 1987, the Canada Cup, you know, when Gretzky didn't want to take the face off and Lemieux didn't want to take the face off, Hawerchuk went in and won the face off. And then to show, I mean, the pick play, I mean, it was interference, it was hooking, whatever you want to call it, but they're not going to call that at that point in time. But just to give Gretzky and Lemieux and, you know, Larry Murphy, but Larry Murphy had no chance in hell of getting that puck on that 3-on-1.
Paul Coffey was on the ice too.
Paul Coffey was on the ice too, yeah. You know, that he was able to make that smart play in the heat of the moment to give Gretzky and Lemieux that extra bit of time in order to get the game-winning goal eventually. I mean, he was such a smart player. He was, and he was on the ice. And I don't know if you read Eric DeHatchik in The Athletic talking about Dale Hawerchuk's passing. It was a great article, great column. I recommend you guys check it out if you haven't seen it yet. He taught, you know, and Eric spoke with Mike Keenan, who was, of course, the coach in 87. And he spoke with Wayne Gretzky. And they talked about how important and how impactful Dale Hawerchuk was to that team and how great of a player he was throughout the 1980s and throughout his career and then the early 90s with the Buffalo Sabres and how underappreciated he was. And it vividly brought to light how important of a player Dale Hawerchuk was, not only to the city of Winnipeg, but to his peers, in the eyes of his peers. He had the utmost respect in the eyes of the guys who he'd battle against night in, night out in the 1980s in the NHL.
Absolutely, and the Canada Cup was arguably the best hockey we've ever seen, maybe with the exception of 72, those debates start, right, like the 2002 Canadian Olympic team, 2014, 2010.
Sure.
The point
it's biased, but I'll say 87 was the best hockey because obviously I wasn't around in 72 and everything else, but to me 87 was the best.
I agree, and you know, you mentioned, you know, the goal. Obviously, we can't not talk about the 87 Canada Cup and Dale Hawerchuk without talking about that winning goal against the USSR, right? Mm-hmm. Every time Hawerchuk talked about that goal, it seemed like he downplayed his role in that goal, and he didn't get credit for an assist, but that was the joke, that he always should have got credit for the assist because he wins the draw and, as you say, makes that play, you know, that allows Gretzky and Lemieux to go in there, and then Larry Murphy jumps up in there. But I think we all knew that Larry Murphy wasn't getting that puck.
No.
Mario was taking that shot all day long.
You and I had as good a chance of getting that puck as Larry Murphy did.
But, you know, you make a good point. I mean, you can't not talk about that series and Hawerchuk's role in it and how underappreciated he was, because he was putting up points in that series. It's not like he was a role player or a third or fourth line. Hawerchuk played a big role. You had the three best centers of that era on one line. So he's right up there, right? Like, yes, Gretzky is the greatest player of all time. Arguably, Mario Lemieux is the second greatest player of all time. But Dale Hawerchuk is arguably a top 10 player of all time, right? Like, we can have that debate. He's certainly top 20, but you could even put him in top 10.
Which goes back to my disrespect comment, is that when the NHL unveiled their 100 best players of all time...
Well, how is Evgeny Malkin not on that list?
Well,
Malkin's a surefire Hall of Famer when he retired.
It didn't make any sense, but Dale Hawerchuk wasn't on that list. And that was one of the biggest omissions of that list.
I really don't care about that list, but I agree with you. If we're talking about him being top 10, top 20 of all time, he can't crack top 100?
Well,
come on.
It just doesn't logically make any sense. And that's sort of the, just again, overshadowed, underappreciated throughout the course of his career. And I hope his family does take some solace in his passing, that the accolades are continuing to roll in for him, and the praise from all throughout the hockey world is rolling in, and I hope his family does take solace in seeing how impactful their dad was, or their husband was, or their son was in his career and in his professional career, and of course in his personal life as well.
Yeah, and I'll say this much, Drew, here in Winnipeg, Manitoba, you know, Ontario, people know how good Dale Hawerchuk was, especially those who watched him play, right? Like our dads, like that generation.
Sure.
Like my first hockey games were going to watch Dale Hawerchuk, Dave Ellett, Bob Essenza. We've got Ian Duncan coming on. Like the 85 to 90 Jets.
Yep.
Like those are the first NHL games we saw. Like Dale Hawerchuk was a superstar. He was putting up those 100 point seasons. So here in Winnipeg and Manitoba, we know just how good he is. Maybe, you know, elsewhere in other parts of Canada, the U.S., maybe he didn't get that appreciation mm-hmm. back in the 80s and the 90s. Certainly he did when he went over to Buffalo because he had 90 point seasons in Buffalo. But I think he got the credit from the people that knew how good he was, like I said, and he didn't really necessarily need the credit because he knew that, you know, Gretzky was always going to be the person that, you know, got all of the headlines and everything like that. But I do think going back to what we talked about before, the type of person that he was, you know, the type of dad that he was, the husband that he was, the coach in Barrie, just, you know, taking the time to sign autographs. I remember back in 2016, we were there, you know, at the Heritage Classic, and he signed every single autograph. And he was so approachable, right? Well, like, it wasn't like, oh, I don't know if I can go up to Hawerchuk. Like, how many autographs do you think Hawerchuk signed in his time in Winnipeg? He probably signed a million autographs. Like, he wasn't the type of guy that would ever shy away from his stardom, right? He was such a good person, class act all the way.
Well, and when he left Winnipeg, and this is sort of my final thought on this one, when he left Winnipeg, and sometimes when you leave, you know, it's messy. Divorces are tough. You know, things there's bad blood. You know, the water under the bridge is all mucky and all murky. There wasn't any of that. He left Winnipeg, and people sort of said, okay, there was no lingering resentment. It was just time at that point in time. Mike Smith had brought in his regime and his philosophy and whatever you want to say about that. It's been said ad nauseum. But there was never any blowback on Dale Hawerchuk for leaving Winnipeg when he did or when the trade happened to Buffalo. And again, that I think is another way of just speaking to the quality individual that we lost earlier this week. Our Illegal Curve question of the day, our Illegal Curve comment of the day, and we want to hear from you. You can send us your tweets at Illegal Curve. You can send us your text. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. We just want your memory. What's your favorite memory, be it an on-ice memory, be it a personal interaction, your favorite memory of Dale Hawerchuk, you know, as he passed away about 5 days or so ago?
I imagine we're going to get lots of responses, you know, saying 87 Canada Cup, but
sure.
Well, there's lots more great memories for sure.
There's tons of people that probably have a memory of running into him at the grocery store and how generous and how kind he was and maybe spending some time talking hockey or just talking with those people. So we want to hear from you. Add a Legal Curve. Send your text to 129090. Much more on Dale Hawerchuk throughout the morning. We're going to be joined by Manitoba Sports Broadcaster Hall of Famer Joe Piscucci to talk about Dale Hawerchuk, his memories of covering Dale Hawerchuk, and former Winnipeg Jets player Ian Duncan, who played with Dale Hawerchuk in the 80s. He's going to join us as well. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Jets' second-line center role. That, of course, is a big topic of discussion this offseason. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Here's another Jack in Roslovic. Across the line, stops up, Roslovic into where the slot for Perreault, back toward the line for Pionk, wrist shot toward the net, stop, rebound, Roslovic, score! Jack Roslovic made that play happen, carrying it inside the zone. Winnipeg got it established, a big fat rebound off a point shot. Roslovic went toward the net, caught the puck, fired it past Schneider.
Our buddy Paulie Edmonds with the call. Big and fat the rebound was. Big and fat is what I've been called before also, but that's a separate issue altogether. I've never really been good at potting in the rebounds, though. You're smirking there, Mr. Ginsburg.
Well, I was going to say, you actually look, you know, a little slimmer lately. I know you've been exercising a lot, eating right.
Yeah, you know, trying to do the little things I can. So, you know, keep myself healthy. Got to keep up with these two little kiddos running around inside my house.
Yeah, I got to say, I'm loving doing the show here at your house. Obviously, Dave Minuk, not on the show.
Where is Dave?
He's got the boys' weekend happening this weekend.
Oh, so the boys are more of a priority than we are?
I guess so, but, you know, he's been doing this, I think, for 20 years or something. So he's enjoying some time, Lake of the Woods, taking some time away from the website. But, you know, this is great. We're sitting outside here on your front porch, and we have to give a shout-out. It's your son Sam's birthday today, so he's opening some presents right now. I brought him some cookies for his birthday, and he's enjoying those right now.
You had 100% brought those cookies for yourself and then found out it was Sam's birthday.
And then handed them to Sam.
Yeah, like, here you go, buddy. I brought these for you.
Why did you get me six cookies from 7-Eleven?
It's 9:30 in the morning. Who gives cookies to a three-year-old at 9:30 in the morning, even on their birthday? But, yes, it is my son's birthday, so shout out to my buddy, my little boy Sam. It is his third birthday. So one day he'll look back and listen to the audio of this and get to hear a shout-out on his birthday. Anyways, welcome back, everyone, to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Wanted to hear from you again, the question of the day, comment of the day. Send us your memories about Dale Hawerchuk, your favorite memory. If it's an on-ice memory, that's great. If it's a personal interaction you had with him, that's great, too. We'll read some of those comments throughout the course of the show. This segment of the program brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So as you're going to talk about Jack Roslovic, easy for me to say, because, of course, the big topic of conversation this offseason is twofold. One, the Jets' second-line center position. Two, the Jets' defense, the top four defensemen. And we've talked about the left side of the defense, and we've talked about a little bit about the center. But, you know, Jack Roslovic, he's going to be entering his third full season as a Winnipeg Jets player. He did play a couple games, you know, a few years ago, but last 2 years were his full seasons there. Should he be considered an option for the Jets' 2C position? Or do you think that ship has sailed a little bit right now, given how he's been deployed so far as a member of the Jets?
I think the ship has sailed as far as I'm concerned. Like, when you talk about Jack Roslovic, right, there's no question that he's got high-end offensive ability. And I remember we talked about this a couple of weeks back, and we've talked about it really over the last couple of years, right? Roslovic had that great year in the American Hockey League with the Moose. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
his 16-17.
Yeah, and his offensive game just hasn't come together in big enough spurts for him to really get that, you know, extended look in the top six. Now, when you're talking about the 2C position, I mean, we've gone over it before. Andrew Kopp is definitely an option there next year. But aside from that, unless you're talking about Brian Little, whose health is very much up in the air at this point, and obviously there's a long time to go before the season starts, right? The season's not going to start until December.
Yeah, who knows if it actually starts on time.
Well, you know, it's a good point, Drew, but, you know, we've got at least 3 months here to figure out what's going on with Brian Little. Maybe that isn't enough time, and you know, maybe we don't really know, you know, if Little's going to be coming back next year or at all, really. I obviously hope that he does come back, but going back to Roslovic, I mean, it's really Kopp or Roslovic at this point, unless the Jets re-sign Cody Eakin, and, you know, Cody Eakin might be, you know, an option there, but I would argue that even if the Jets do re-sign Cody Eakin,
he shouldn't be a
second-line center, right? So he should be a bottom-six guy. And so when you go back to Roslovic, I think Roslovic is a guy that could be on the trade block. I really do. When you talk about the Jets right now, and, you know, we just discussed this recently, it was either last week's show, I forget, or 2 weeks ago when we were talking about, you know, are the Jets going to be more active in free agency, or, you know, is Chevy going to be more active, you know, when it comes to the trades, right? And I think Roslovic is a prime candidate to be a guy that's moved, especially if the Jets want to package up a draft pick.
Well, let me ask you this. You know, given his last couple seasons where he's topped out at this past year at 29 points, and it was a career year, so I'm not taking anything away from him. He had 12 goals, 17 assists. It's been his best year as an NHL player. Is his value high enough right now to package him in a trade? Or do you think that the Jets should try and maybe rebuild that value in the course of a season or in the course of a part of a season and then maybe make an in-season move? Like, right now, are you trading? I don't want to use the phrase diminished asset because I don't think it's that dire. But are you trading a guy who maybe still has more value to show and more to give, but hasn't been given that opportunity? Maybe if given that opportunity as a second line center, his value increases. But it is worth noting, of course, that the Jets have never deployed him as a centerman, you know, on a regular basis at the NHL level. You remember,
right,
he was drafted as a center. He played as a center at Miami of Ohio.
Yep.
He was a center for part of the year with the Moose when he had his success, and then the Moose moved him to the wing.
Right.
And I think most people thought that was to give him an avenue to get into the NHL. But he's been a winger ever since.
Right. And this is what I would say. This would be my answer to that. You make a good point about, you know, would you want to trade him now when his value is somewhat high? Or would you want to maybe use him in a situation where you know that his offensive totals are going to be higher, and then maybe you trade him closer to the trade deadline or maybe next summer, right? But going back to what your question was about Roslovic potentially being a second-line center, Drew.
Yeah.
Like, he's 23 years old. I think that the expectations for Roslovic were heightened because he was that, if you remember, he was the second first round pick the Jets had in 2015. Connor went 17. Was it 17? It was 17, I think, Connor. And then yeah. Roslovic was 25,
25,
I believe, right?
That's right.
So Roslovic, you know, was tied in with Kyle Connor, right? And we know that Kyle Connor's, you know, trajectory is sky high, right?
Meteoric.
Yeah. And so he's always been tied together with Connor because of the success they had with the Moose. And we mentioned, I don't remember if he got player of the year or rookie of the year, Roslovic, but I remember he got some accolades that one year when he had the great offensive year. He certainly went to the All-Star game.
Yeah.
I know that, but you have to ask yourself, you know, are you giving Roslovic this second-line center role just so hopefully it works out or so his trade value increases? Like, to me, you've seen enough of him at the NHL level now. You know, what is this, 3 years? He's a pending RFA. Like, that's something else that has to be discussed. Like, what kind of contract, if you're going to keep Roslovic, are you going to offer him? Like, to me, I don't think you're offering Roslovic a long-term deal.
No,
like,
it's a bridge deal.
It has to be a bridge
deal. I mean, I think you're probably doing if you're the Jets and if you're Roslovic, you're probably doing what? A two-year bridge at $2 million a season?
Yeah, maybe a little higher, but he's definitely not, like, in the $4 or $5 million category. Like, this is the thing. Going back to what I said, and I'm not giving a cop-out answer because I've been a little bit harder on Roslovic. Like, he has so much skill. But there's times when you don't see that, and yet he doesn't have an impact on the game.
How much of that do you think is the trust that Paul Maurice doesn't seem to necessarily have in Jack Roslovic?
Well, Roslovic was playing with Adam Lowry and Andrew Kopp. Like, that's a very key role for the Jets. And, you know, I agree with you.
But are you taking a guy who's got offensive upside and turning him into more of a defensive specialist at that point in time? Is that the role that he's best suited for? Is Paul Maurice maybe limiting Jack Roslovic by how he's being deployed by the Jets head coach?
It's a good question, Drew, but probably. But you have Kyle Connor, Nikolai Ehlers, Patrick Laine, and Blake Wheeler as your top six wingers.
So you're saying where else are the Jets going to deploy him?
But this is my point, though, with Roslovic possibly being traded. And I have no idea. Maybe the Jets sign Roslovic to a 2 or 3 year deal. I would assume it would be 2 years. There's no reason why you would do 1 year.
Yeah.
So if the Jets do sign him, I'm not going to be surprised. All I'm saying is, like, aren't you wasting him a little bit? I don't think he's suited for that third line role. Like, Brandon Tanev, to me, was perfect on the Kopp-Lowry line. To me, Jack Roslovic, he has to be on an offensive-minded line, right? Like, he's a playmaker. Yes, he can score goals. And Dave Minuk has talked about this, you know, watching Roslovic with the Moose for all those years. Like, Roslovic's a guy that can make plays. And yes, Nikolai Ehlers and Patrick Laine, if you put Roslovic in the middle, I think that line would have some success. I just don't know if you want to pencil him in as your second-line center, because I think that's a bit of an experiment. He's not a proven second-line center. I think that line, whether it's, you know, Laine and Ehlers, or if Connor's dropped down to that second line, I think that they need an established second line center, and Roslovic hasn't proven it at the NHL level.
We continue to keep a close eye on that battle as the Jets offseason continues. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Joe Piscucci. He's a member of the Broadcasters Association of Manitoba Hall of Fame. Talk more about the passing of Dale Hawerchuk. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number one. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. We're asking you for your memories, be they on ice or in person, a personal memory of Dale Hawerchuk. He passed away, of course, earlier this week. We'll read some of those out throughout the course of the show. And, of course, our website, it's got the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio. That's available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Joe Piscucci. You know Joe, of course, has his time here in Winnipeg as a member of the media. He's a member of the Broadcasters Association of Manitoba Hall of Fame. He joins us from Toronto. Joe, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, guys. My pleasure.
Thanks so much, Joe. Obviously brought you on to talk about Dale Hawerchuk and his untimely passing, of course, earlier this week from stomach cancer. You know, Joe, having, you know, covered the Winnipeg Jets, the 1.0 version, and being here in Winnipeg, you know, throughout the early and late 80s, do you have one sort of indelible memory of Dale Hawerchuk that stands out more than all the other ones in your course of covering him as a Winnipeg Jets player?
And hard to say, not really. It's just a whole bunch of memories, of him and, you know, how excited, you know, the city was, when I got here in January of 1982 about Dale, about the Jets, and in his last season, with the team in that, 89-90, he was, you know, he had the captaincy kind of taken away from him. He had to share it with Randy Carlyle and Thomas Steen. That was what Bob Murdoch wanted. And then, you know, he struggled a little bit, and his ice time was being cut. So he was kind of down at that point. He was, you know, it wasn't his, I guess, best offensive season. And I do remember I put a videotape together of all of his goals as a Winnipeg Jet, and I gave it to him. I don't know, the sort of that positive meant, you know, kind of reinforcement that, you know, you still have it kind of thing. I don't know what I was thinking, but, you know, he thanked me for that. And, those are the kind of memories I have. Him coming down coming back from the 1987, Canada Cup the next day after they had beaten the Russians in game three. Just the smile on his face, you know, he had one of the best smiles. Like, you know, it just would light up the room whenever he smiled. And he was so happy that day, you know, and, it was just, those are some of the memories that I you know, that are vivid to me.
You know, Joe, we want to talk more about the 1987 Canada Cup and, you know, some of, you know, Hawerchuk's on-ice exploits. I just wanted to ask you about what it was like, though, to cover Dale Hawerchuk back then, because, you know, you mentioned, you know, in the early 80s and, you know, Drew was born in 81, 82. That's right around when, you know, Dale Hawerchuk came into the league, and I remember you were synonymous with the Jets and your coverage with CKND and Global. You know, I, like many people, grew up watching the Jets, watching your coverage of the Jets. I wanted to specifically ask you, what was it like to cover Hawerchuk? Because he was a superstar, basically, from the moment he arrived in Winnipeg. What was it like to cover him, not just on the ice, but off the ice?
Well, you're right. He was a superstar. He was the first superstar that, you know, I got to watch and cover on an almost daily basis. But you wouldn't know he was a superstar. He didn't act like he was better than anybody else. I could certainly tell that he cared about winning, about how well the Jets did. You know, there was a lot of weight on his shoulders that, you know, he was going to take this team, you know, to the Stanley Cup, you know, as much as like Wayne Gretzky was doing in Edmonton. So there was a lot of pressure on him, you know, but you didn't really see it. I mean, I know a couple of times he did get frustrated with some of the media coverage, but I never had any difficulties with him. There was there was a report in one of the national newspapers that he was difficult to deal with. And that was never the case. You know, he wasn't difficult to deal with. He was a little testy after a loss, as most hockey players are. But other than that, he was great. I mean, you know, for Jet fans, when Bobby Hull got here in the WHA, I would almost say that Bobby Hull was your parents' hockey player, because they had grown up with him, watching him in the NHL with the Blackhawks. Dale Hawerchuk was the player for the younger Jet fans, like Drew, who grew up watching the Jets, watching Dale Hawerchuk. You know, I mean, he brought a new fan base to the club. He made it younger.
Joe Piscucci is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know Joe, of course, from his time as a member of the Winnipeg media, and he's a member of the Broadcasters Association of Manitoba Hall of Fame. You know, Joe, when the trade happened, when Dale was traded to Buffalo, and Phil Housley, of course, was the main centerpiece, and the pick that ended up being Keith Tkachuk came back to Winnipeg. Was it a function of it was just time for a change, that, you know, his time in Winnipeg had expired, or was Mike Smith trying to sort of prove himself as the alpha and you know, sort of shed the Jets of anything to do with the John Ferguson era?
I would go with the latter. I mean, like I said earlier, I mean, that last season with the Jets, and, you know, you take away the captaincy from Dale Hawerchuk, you are sending a message. When you're reducing his ice time, you are sending a message. I remember I interviewed, Bob Murdoch about Dale Hawerchuk's struggles, and I asked it a very pointed question. And I asked him, does Dale Hawerchuk's play warrant getting more ice time? And he didn't want to answer it, but he did. He said, no, it doesn't. You know, and in the playoffs, of course, Dave Ellett told me that in that game six here in Winnipeg against the Oilers, you know, prior to the game, there was a power play meeting, and Dale wasn't in the room because they'd taken him off the power play. And, of course, the Jets fell behind, and then in the second period, Dale was back on the power play. So, you know, the messages were out there that the organization, he was, you know, no longer desired or felt wanted by the organization. And that was a product, yeah, of Mike Smith and Bob Murdoch.
Was that just their ego run amok, or was it a fundamental sort of a philosophical difference?
Yeah. I mean, I guess when they took him off the power play for game six, I guess they're trying to say that, you know, Dave told me they're trying to prove that they could win without Dale. He thought that was their motivation for doing that, was that they could win without him as an important part of the team. You know, and
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think any of us would have thought that, because Dale was a point a game, or better than a point a game player in the playoffs, and he also led the rally of the Jets in that game to come back and tie the Oilers before Jari Kurri scored. So he was still driving the engine, you know. And but, you know, in the minds of Mike Smith, I would say that, you know, they didn't want him as part of the organization anymore.
You know, Joe, just sticking with, you know, that last year, you know, that Dale Hawerchuk was a member of the Jets, 1990, of course. And, you know, I saw you were tweeting out your favorite Jets memories, and that was one of the memories that you included. You had a video clip of Hawerchuk's last goal as a member of the Jets in that Smythe Division semifinal. And was that maybe, even though, I mean, I don't think any Jets fans harbored any resentment towards Dale Hawerchuk, because I think, you know, you would agree that he's beloved by you know, Winnipeggers, Manitobans, and beyond. But was that maybe what was the most unfortunate thing about that time, was that Hawerchuk was still in his prime, and he went on to Buffalo, and, you know, he was still just as effective. It's not like, you know, he was on the back nine of his career. From your memories back in 1990, was that what was so unfortunate, that, you know, he couldn't stick around and, you know, play another, you know, 3, 4, 5 years here in Winnipeg?
Well, yeah, but it because of the way the organization, I mean, was treating him, it was time for him to move on. He requested the trade. I mean, he was basically doing what I think Mike Smith wanted, and that was to move on from Dale Hawerchuk. But we all know Bob Murdoch cost the Jets that series in 1990, and that was their best year because of all the other upsets that had gone on in the playoffs. That was their best chance of getting to the Stanley Cup final. And, you know, had he just played Bob Esenza, the Jets would have won that series, maybe in 5 games, and it wouldn't have gone to a 7th game. And the fact that he didn't play his best goalie in the most important game of the season, it was just, I mean, the players resented it. They were very upset. I know I asked Dale the next day after the Game 7 loss, you know, were the players upset that Beauregard started? And he said yes. You know, they didn't blame Beauregard. He had nothing to do with the decision. They were just upset at Bob Murdoch. And, of course, that carried on into the following season as the team just sort of disintegrated. the next year, and of course didn't make the playoffs, and Bob Murdoch was fired.
Joe Piscucci is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Joe, of course, is a former member of the Winnipeg Media. He's in the Broadcasters Association of Manitoba Hall of Fame. Joe, one final question for you. If Dale Hawerchuk had been able to eliminate the Gretzky Oilers just once in all the times that the two teams played, if he had been able to do it just once, or that Jets team had been able to do it just once, how does that change how he's viewed, not necessarily in Winnipeg, but maybe outside of Winnipeg in the greater hockey world? Because earlier in the show we were talking about Hill, he never got the respect that he deserved from the greater hockey world. So had he been able to eliminate the Oilers just once, how does that change things?
Oh, I think that changes everything. I mean, the Jets, I've said this before, Jets didn't have enough of the supporting cast to help Dale. Like, he made other players around him better, but there wasn't enough of a supporting cast to take them past the Oilers. They certainly didn't have the goaltending that Edmonton had. And that was another big factor. And their best year where they did have the supporting cast, of course, 84-85, Dale's gone. Right, he's not playing in that series against the Oilers, and it would have been more, it would have been more competitive. You know, during that stretch, it was 19 games or something that the Oilers had beaten the Jets in a row. You know, it was just so total domination, and that's why 1990 was so hurtful for Jet fans, because this was their moment to finally beat the Oilers, and of course, it didn't happen. But yeah, if he'd been able to lead the Jets, you know, past Gretzky's Oilers, it would have definitely changed the hockey world's, you know, impression of him, or I should say the fans. I mean, I think the hockey world knew how good a player Dale Hawerchuk was, but maybe not the fans, because we didn't have the major, you know, television exposure that we do now. I mean, CKND only televised 14 Jet games a season, and maybe they were on national television another four times. That might have been it.
Yeah.
You know, so not many fans outside of Manitoba got to see Dale Hawerchuk play.
It was a totally different world back in the 80s and early 90s, certainly.
Oh,
one
yes,
final question
was
for you, Joe. Should Dale Hawerchuk get credit for that second assist on Lemieux's goal in 1987?
I'd love to start a campaign, yes. Yes, I'm still upset. He wins the faceoff, and what, Lemieux tips it out to Gretzky, Gretzky back to Lemieux, and, you know, like, of course he deserves an assist, especially for hooking the Russian player on the back check.
That's right.
He deserves second assist for that.
If it's not credited on the score sheet, it's credited in the indelible memories that he created in 1987, and of course throughout his career.
We'll get that campaign going,
NHL.
Joe. We'll start it up.
Yeah, I wonder who do you call to change it?
Well, do we know anybody who works for the Hockey Hall of Fame?
But they can't change that. Yeah, I know a few people. I know Phil Pritchard.
There you go.
I know Phil, the keeper of the cup.
Maybe he can just engrave Dale's name on it surreptitiously when no one's looking. I don't think anyone will notice that, right?
I agree. Yeah, we'll try and do that.
There you go. You got a task for the next couple months ahead of you, Joe. Joe Piscucci is, of course, a former Winnipeg sportscaster. He's a member of the Broadcasters Association of Manitoba Hall of Fame. Joe, always appreciate your time, your memories, your insight. Thanks so much for joining us to talk about Dale Hawerchuk.
Always a pleasure talking to you guys. Stay safe.
Take care, Joe. Thanks very much. Take care. When we come back, we talk about the Jets' options for the 10th overall draft pick at the upcoming NHL draft, whenever that's going to be, sometime in October, if I'm not mistaken. And still to come on the show, Ian Duncan, former Winnipeg Jets 1.0 player, going to join us to talk about playing with Dale Hawerchuk. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio. 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN1290.ca.
It is now time to see who the winning team is.
The first selection in the 2020 NHL draft belongs to the New York Rangers.
from a couple weeks ago with that announcement, the Winnipeg Jets fans knew that their team was going to pick 10th overall at the upcoming NHL draft. That 10th overall selection has a big circle around it. Lots of Jets fans interested to see what the Jets do. Do they take a prospect? Do they try and rebuild what is a bit of a diminished cupboard when it comes to their prospects? Or do they try and package that deal, package that pick, mind you, to get that maybe missing second line center or left side defenseman?
I still can't believe the NHL rigged that draft lottery.
I know. It's hard to believe. And they so blatantly showed it when the guy dropped the ball without showing the Rangers logo. I mean, I love the conspiracy theorists about it. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday morning. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment is brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. That's a very long time. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Reminder, we've been asking you for your memories of Dale Hawerchuk. They can be an on-ice memory. They can be a personal memory. Maybe you had an interaction with him. We'll read some of those memories throughout the course of the show. You can tweet them to us, at Illegal Curve. You can text them to us. 129090 is how to send the text. Standard messaging rates do apply. So the 10th overall pick, Mr. Ginsburg. Let me ask you, start with this one. Do you think the Jets end up making that pick, or do you think they end up trading that pick?
I have absolutely no idea.
I'm glad you're on radio with me. I know you don't know. That's why I'm asking you your opinion.
Well, it's such a tough one, right? Because we know you can get a really good pick at number 10. Like, this is a deep draft, right? Like, obviously, you know, it's tough to say right now how good the draft is going to eventually turn out. Like, 2015 to me and, you know, most amateur scouts and, you know, those who cover the draft, you know, Craig Button, Corey Pronman, all of these types of, people. I mean, that 2015 draft was just so deep. And that's why the Jets at 17 were able to get a 40 goal scorer or an almost 40 goal scorer in Kyle Connor. But, you know, back to this 10th overall pick. You know, Murat Ateš put together a really good list for the Athletic of, you know, the possible players that the Jets could take. You know, Jake Sanderson, Anton Lindell, you know, Winnipeg's Seth Jarvis was among that group. Connor Zary, who had an absolutely ridiculous year in the Western Hockey League. So there's going to be some really good players available with that 10th overall pick. But I guess you have to ask yourself, like, is Chevy going to have a trade out there where the 10th overall pick is going to get him that second line center or a top four defenseman? Because as far as I'm concerned, Drew, you're not trading the 10th overall pick to get anything but that, right? Like, you're not trading for a goalie. You're not trading for like a third line center. You need a 2C and you need a top four D. And we're going to be talking about this for months and months and months here. You know, hopefully we're not talking about it that long, but whether it's free agency or trade. So basically my answer would be, they'll keep the first round pick if they're able to address those needs in free agency. Like, if you can go out and you can sign a TJ Brody or a Tyson Berry, and, you know, you can go out and you can sign
I think you need free agency to do one of those. And
I don't think you're going to get both of them. I agree.
And I think you need to use that pick, you know, as a trade.
It's the carrot you're going to dangle.
That's
right.
And especially in an off season where the salary cap is flat,
yep,
where a lot of teams are going to be in some salary cap trouble, you can use that 10th overall pick to help those teams. Here's your 10th overall pick. We'll give you the 10th overall pick. You give us this player that no longer fits within your salary cap structure. And
yep.
I'm not talking about a bad contract. I'm just talking about, you know, there's teams who are going to have to reallocate their money around to keep players that they might want to keep more than the guy who's currently their second line center. So you use that 10th overall pick to dangle that so that you can get that guy and he can just plop him in your lineup. And all of a sudden, if you find a surefire, no doubt second line center and you can drop him right in the middle of your lineup, well, you've solved so many of your problems.
Yes, and I agree, and that's why I think I would trade that 10th overall pick, first round pick, because when you talk about free agency, we've gone over the list of defensemen, right? Like, Alex Pietrangelo is at the top of that list.
Sure.
And by the way, I mean, if he goes out like that, and we do expect him to sign with another team, what a great representative, captain for the Blues. He gets a Stanley Cup, so Pietrangelo has as nothing to be ashamed of when it comes to his time with the Blues. If he decides to move to another team via free agency, they can't afford him at this point. Let's be honest, flat cap, and they've got other players to pay. But Pietrangelo is a guy that obviously would be, you know, at the top of Chevy's list, I imagine. But, you know, we talked about some of those other defensemen, and maybe you can address the top four D in free agency, but I really think it's going to be tough to find your, let's say, Paul Stastny in unrestricted free agency, right? So I agree with you, Drew. If you can move that 10th overall pick, and you would have to package it up with another one player or, you know, two players.
I don't know that you have to. I mean, Vancouver did it last year where they took their first round pick and they traded it to Tampa Bay, a team that had salary cap, it was tight against the salary cap, and they got JT Miller. So I think that 10th overall pick. And then
they had to give up a second round pick, if I'm not mistaken, or a third round pick. I believe there was another pick in that trade.
I'd have to look back. You could be right. But I'm saying that in the current landscape that the NHL is going to be in when the offseason starts, there's going to be a lot of teams that are going to need to shed salary and shed a player who might find it very appealing to draft somebody who doesn't come onto their books for another 2 years or another three
sure.
years down the road.
And it also depends who we're talking about here, right?
Of course.
Like, yeah, you might be able to get it with just a first-round pick for a second-round center. Pardon me, second-line center. But anyways, we're going to have those debates in the coming weeks, you know, as we head into the draft.
And when we come back, we're going to talk more about Dale Hawerchuk, former Winnipeg Jets 1.0 player. Ian Duncan is going to join us to talk about his experience in playing with Dale Hawerchuk. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290 alongside Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us here via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. We want your memories, be they on ice or personal, of Dale Hawerchuk. Obviously, this week's show, a tribute to Dale Hawerchuk upon his passing earlier in the week. And our website, it's got the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio that's available at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the program an alumni member of the Winnipeg Jets 1.0. He played with Dale Hawerchuk back in the mid-1980s. We're pleased to welcome to the show Ian Duncan. Ian, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, boys.
How are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks. You know, it's a tough week with the passing of Dale and a couple of young hockey players that I know personally in this area. So it's been, you know, as we say, things go in threes. But Dale was, you know, he's honored like he has been this week. And it's great to see that, you know, even though he played in the shadow of Gretzky and everybody in the West there, everybody, I think, is seeing how great Dale was. And I know him off the ice, and he was a better man than the player he was himself.
And we're going to talk about your memories, Ian, and we do appreciate you joining us, certainly with heavy hearts this week. You know, you joined the Jets. You got your first action with the Jets back in 86-87 after a pretty storied career at Bowling Green State University. You know, 4 years there, putting up some very impressive numbers. You know, a seventh-round pick of the Jets back in 1983. You know, when you joined the Jets in 86-87, you played six games in the regular season, then played seven more games in the playoffs that year. You know, what do you remember about your first interaction with Dale Hawerchuk?
Oh, just how talented he was, first off, you know, as a player, but then when getting to know him off the ice, he was very soft-spoken to you. He wasn't, you know, like, I'm a veteran and you're the rookie, you do this, you know. But he was always there to help. He was always there to encourage. He was also there to, you know, hey, do it this way, and it's been successful for me in my career, and here I am a rookie, and I think Dale was in probably his fifth or sixth season at the time. And I just wanted to listen, you know. I don't know who said it to me, but I think it was Randy Carlyle. The first thing I walked into the Winnipeg Jets locker room that year was, hey, rookie, keep your mouth shut and your eyes and ears open, and you'll learn something. And I just kind of nodded my head and said, yes, sir. And from then on, it was a learning experience. And I can honestly say, I'll say that Dale was the best center that I ever played with in my career. And, he taught me so much on the ice and also being great friends off the ice.
You know, Ian, you just mentioned that, Dale was the best center that you ever played with. And we obviously all know that, he's one of the most talented forwards to ever play the game. 20th all-time in points, Hockey Hall of Famer, six 100-point seasons. And you mentioned your first full year in the NHL with the Jets. You had a great rookie season, 19 goals. And I believe Howerchuk, if I'm not mistaken, I think that was 121 points that he had that year. And again, I'd have to look at his stats, but I think that was his second or third best point season, single season points. And, we remember watching Dale Howerchuk and all of the highlights, but, for you, and Drew mentioned it, I mean, you had really good offensive totals with Bowling Green and in the NHL, but what was it like to be on the ice and just witness him, in his prime? And, this goes back, I guess, to, how underrated he was, but, could you just talk about just how skilled of a player Dale Howerchuk really was?
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, day in and day out, Dale would amaze you in practice three or four times in an hour and a half to 2 hour practice, But at the same time, he would also do that defensively. Dale wasn't very well known for his defensive play, but that attributed to his offensive play because I thought personally he played really good defense. And when you're out there with Dale and whoever's on the right side, Paul McLean, Andrew McBain, whoever it might be, when I was playing with Dale, it was just, take care of your own zone. And one of the first things that Dale did say to me was, hey, rookie, just go to the net, put your stick down, and I'll find you. And so I took that to heart. And he made it happen out there. And that was the nice thing. If you work hard for Dale, he's going to work hard for you. And I had to work twice as hard to get up to his level of just skill and maturity on the ice and seeing the ice and, playing against Wayne Gretzky 8 times a year. And then, but also seeing Dale, every day on and off the ice. There wasn't a whole lot of difference. I think it was just the supporting cast that made Gretzky, not taking any of the Wayne Crow from Wayne Gretzky, no way. But the supporting cast of Messier, Curry, you can go on and on, Charlie Huddy, Kevin Lowe, Steve Smith, Grant Fuhr. You can go through the whole supporting cast of the Edmonton Oilers. And we had a pretty good team as the mid-'80s, late-'80s Jets. And, we were right up there with the number one power play in the league, too. And we were overshadowed by Calgary and Edmonton a little bit, but Dale was the one that led the charge every time, and with the veteran leadership of Randy Carlyle, Dale Howerchuk, and Big Mac, Paul McLean, you can't go wrong with those three in your corner, and especially how talented Dale was. You just fed off of that, and I can honestly say, I'm so glad that I got to play with somebody of his caliber.
Ian, we mentioned earlier you spent 4 years at Bowling Green State before turning pro and becoming a member of the Jets. And, you won a national championship that first year with Bowling Green, and there were some really good players on that team, Gary Galley and Dave Ellett. And I wanted to ask you, what was it like, to turn pro and then you're playing on the Jets with your former teammate and good friend Dave Ellett? And, I think, it should also be noted that I think people forget, how good of an offensive defenseman Dave Ellett was. Speaking of, how underrated Howerchuk was, I mean, Dave Ellett was a, perennial 45, 50, 55-point defenseman. So what was that like for you to win that championship with Dave Ellett and then, get to play on the Jets with him?
Yeah, it was magical kind of thing. With like you just mentioned, the two defensemen right there that was on our national championship team, Gary Galley, that played, I think, 17, 18 years in the NHL, and or 15, and I think Davey got 17 in. But playing with Dave at Bowling Green, that was just a magical time for me being a freshman. Dave was a sophomore from Kanata, Ontario, and basically Dave and the household he lived in, they kind of took me under their wing. We had to live off campus freshman year during Christmas, and I had to bunk up with them for the week. So I was told to drive to the store in somebody's bicycle with a basket and pick up more beer. That was my job as a freshman. So, but Dave Ellett was a great player in college. And then, that was one of the things that, you know, made me comfortable. You mentioned that I was able to get in, 6 games at the end of our season, after losing out to Harvard in the NCAAs, as a senior. Flew to Winnipeg on Monday, practiced with the team Tuesday, and played my first game Wednesday. It was good to see Dave Ellett again. Hadn't seen him in a couple of years, but, I live with Dave Ellett. So, when I got to Winnipeg, and for a couple of years there, we lived together, and that's how I became really good friends with Dale at the same time, because Dave and Dale used to hang out a lot of times, and they both took money out of my pocket on the golf course out there. And but you know, having Dave in Winnipeg made it more comfortable for me to make that quick transition, and then being able to start off, you know, with Ronnie Wilson in the middle, and I think it was Andrew McBain on the right, or maybe Jimmy Neal, my first game. And, just moving up to the number one line with Dale and Big Mac or Andrew McBain. And then, like I said before, we had one of the most potent power plays in the league. And I think we lost the number one power play percentage on the last night of the year, where Washington or somebody went 2 for 3 and got us by 0.1 percentage. So just Dale was there, always there for you, and especially off the ice. I became friends, like I said, Dave Ellett and Dale hung out a lot together, and that's when Dale started dating Crystal, and Dale lived out on the farm, and so we had some good times out there. But I can honestly say that having those two guys, Dave Ellett is still a personal good friend of mine. You mentioned the national championship. We had a 35th reunion last summer in Cleveland here, because there's 6 of us that live in Cleveland, and 18 players showed up. So it was good to see Dave Ellett again and celebrate the national championship. But getting to Winnipeg was, you know, 7th round draft pick, wasn't supposed to be there. And it was just having somebody in my corner like John Ferguson. And, God rest his soul, also somebody being in your corner like Mr. Ferguson was, goes a long way.
Ian Duncan is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ian played for the Winnipeg Jets 1.0 back in the 1980s, the mid-1980s. We're discussing his memories of Dale Hawerchuk. And Ian, we'll let you go on this last question. You mentioned that you had the opportunity to know Dale, you know, on the ice and, of course, off the ice through your connection with Dave Ellett and being friendly with Dale. Do you have any stories, maybe radio-friendly stories, that you'd be willing to share with the audience just about Dale as an off-ice person? Because everyone knows him for his on-ice performance, but maybe one of the boys kind of stories that we might not necessarily know at this point.
Well, yes, I do. I've got lots, but it always came back to it always comes back to having a good laugh, and we always cut on each other. You know, there was like a 5 or 6 pack of us that hung together, like Randy Carlisle. And on the road, especially Randy and Dale and Dave Ellett and myself and Brad Berry. And so we were always mucking it up together. And I was always, you know, the young guy on the squad. And but we would always give it to each other back and forth. But Dale would, we'd give it to Dale just like, you know, we'd give it to Kitty and they'd give it to me. And so it always happens all the time. But the one thing I can honestly say about Dale is, after we lost out to Calgary, or Edmonton the second year, we all went back to his ranch. And the one the boys liked me. I think I can't remember his first or second year, but they liked me because Dale kept me up till about 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning. We were all there and having a couple adult beverages. And I was the first one to test that morning at 8 a.m. You have to test out as you test in. And guess who blew the machine up? I did. So all the veterans really liked me because I blew the machine out of the wax. So they had another day of reprieve, so they didn't have to test till the next day. So that's my Dale Howard Chuck story, and I'm sticking to it.
Ian Duncan was a member of the Winnipeg Jets 1.0. Obviously played with the Jets and Dale Howardchuk in the mid-80s. Ian, appreciate your time. Appreciate you sharing some of your memories of Dale Howardchuk with us and with our audience. And all the best to you going forward.
Well, I appreciate your time. And again, thank you for asking me to be on here about Dale. And, you know, rest in peace and God bless to his family. And say hello to everybody in Winnipeg.
Will do. Not so much winter in the middle of August, but I hear what you're saying. All the best to you too, Ian. Take care, and
thanks
for joining us.
Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to look at the Stanley Cup playoffs. The Philadelphia Flyers eliminated the Montreal Canadiens last night. It was a heated series. We talk about the back and forth, the Niskanen hit, the Gallagher broken jaw, and the reaction of both Mark Bergevin and Alain Vigneault. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We still want your Dale Howardchuk memories. Much more to come on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I was expecting more, and I'm extremely disappointed that AV would make a comment about a player's injuries without knowing the extent of it. Brendan Gallagher will be missing an extended period of time and will be eating his meal out of a straw. And I don't wish that on anybody, and that include the Flyers players. It's a battle out there, and we don't want people to get hurt like that.
That's Montreal Canadiens general manager Mark Bergevin responding to some of the pointed comments from Alain Vigneault regarding Matt Niskanen's cross-check to the jaw of Brendan Gallagher. Gallagher missed last night's Game 6 as a result of the broken jaw. Niskanen missed the game as a result of being suspended for the cross-check. And the Flyers defeated the Montreal Canadiens last night and will move on to face the New York Islanders in the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, these unique Stanley Cup playoffs. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we are live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. So, as it took a little while, but we finally got some bad blood, some heated rhetoric between the Habs and the Flames, and really the first sort of
Flyers.
Yeah, sorry, the Habs and the Flyers, not
the
Flames.
Little Freudian slip.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Good.
We'll talk about the Flames later on. But,
I slip up all the time. You know
do.
That.
It's okay. I don't hold it personally against you either. You know, obviously a unique playoffs with the bubble and the lack of fans, and I think that's probably contributed to maybe a little less emotion, a little less heat on the ice right now than in the typical playoffs, but we finally got it here. You know, look, Niskanen's hit on Gallagher is not a good hit. It's a dirty play. He got suspended for it. As a result,
he should have got at least one more game.
Probably. I would have been fine with him getting two games. I mean, but
that was arguably a five-game suspension.
In the regular season, probably. And then you know what they say. It's there.
It's different in the playoffs.
Every game in the playoffs is, or, you know, every game in the playoffs is worth two in the regular season. That sort of thing is the rule of thumb. And sure, he got off on the lighter side of things. To me, though, the Montreal Canadiens, as an organization, doing a little bit of whining in this series.
Well, there was a propaganda campaign that came out from the Canadians when you consider, you saw the tweet and all that, like you saw the slow motion video and everything like that. Like, Gallagher's jaw was broken.
Yeah.
Like, let's forget the fact that what Gallagher said, I think it was 2014, about Derek Stepan and his broken jaw. If you remember, or if you forget, for those listening, Stepan broke his jaw and Gallagher made a comment.
Well, Stepan broke his jaw because I think it was Brandon Prust.
Yes.
broke his jaw.
Right.
You know, he hit him. He hit him and broke his jaw.
Yes.
So it's not like
Yeah, it wasn't Gallagher that did it, but Gallagher made a comment saying that it wasn't that bad. And the same thing happened with members of the Flyers, including Vigneault, that were saying that, you know, it wasn't really that bad. He's going to be back for Game 6.
Because you got to put it into context. Sure. Vigneault, of course, was the head coach.
Yes.
So Alain Vigneault, who's the current head coach of the Flyers,
was
the then head coach of the Rangers when Prost broke Derek Stepan's jaw.
Correct.
And Gallagher made his comments where he basically said that Stepan was faking, for lack of better word.
Right. So it was one of those situations where
turnabout is fair play.
Pot kettle black, right? So, I mean, but going back to this series, I mean, this was arguably the best series of the first round. And, you know, I tweeted this out yesterday, Drew, and, you know, I don't want to be negative Nelly here because you're usually, you know, negative Mandel over there. But
thank you.
I mean, to me, how good can the first round be if there wasn't one series that went to seven games? Like, I'm sorry, I'm going to be that guy. Like, I thought there were some good series, but, like, give me a seven gamer. Like, I wanted at least one of these series to go to seven games. I was really hoping it was going to be Vancouver-St. Louis, even though, you know, we were pulling for the Canucks, the Canadian team, you know, the surprising upstart. Nobody expected anything out of the Canucks. But for me, like, you got to have at least one series. Again, that's just me. I don't speak for everybody. I don't speak for you. But to me, that you mentioned it. There was bad blood, literally, between the Habs and the Flyers. And the craziest thing about this series is that it totally, the script of this series was totally not what you expected to happen. Like, the Canadians outplayed the Flyers for big chunks of the series, including Game 6. Like, Carter Hart was the story of this series. Two shutouts. We know that, you know, his boyhood idol was Carey Price. Carter Hart was better than Carey Price. Now, yes, the Montreal Canadiens, you know, they didn't get timely goals and everything like that. But to me, when you look back at the series, you know, and the fact that, you know, this series wasn't able to go to seven games, I mean, Carter Hart was the reason I think that happened. Like, he absolutely, in my opinion, stole the series.
Look, he was great for the Flyers. And I mean, it's not that Carey Price was bad for the Habs, but Carter Hart, and in Carter Hart, the Flyers have finally found that number one goaltender that they've been looking for, well, probably since the, you know, Ron Hextall to some extent in the 80s, or even before that, Pelle Lindbergh in the
70s. Since Garth Snow.
I want to clarify, you're just kidding there. But, you know, Carter Hart was great. The Habs just, you know, Nick Suzuki patting Carter Hart on the head after Joel Armia scores that goal, that's Bush. That's Bush League. And then,
well, you're poking the bear.
Yeah.
Right? Like, then, you're just, that's bulletin board material. Like, you're just giving them more incentive to do that back to you. And they did.
And
right?
then at the end of the game yesterday, you know, the Flyers patted Nick Suzuki on after the goal mouth scramble.
Right.
And Shea Weber gets all upset about it. Come on! It's your team, Shea Weber, that's starting all this. It's your team that is feeding this beast. It's your team that isn't remembering, you know, all the actions. It was Brendan Gallagher who made the comments, you know, 6 years ago. So Brendan Gallagher is a guy who gets a lot out of his game, and he's a guy that every team would want on their team, but every team hates playing against them. But,
I love Gallagher.
Yeah, because he you know, he certainly plays on the edge, and he's talented.
But he's not a dirty player.
Not dirty, but you know that he's always looking for every advantage possible.
Yeah.
He's not dirty like
he's a great player,
like a Matt Cook or something
that. No.
But you know, he made his comments, and Alain Vigneault is no fool. He remembers those comments. So when he can throw them back at him, and I know Mark Bergevin just has to come to defense of his guy, but I thought that Twitter stuff, I thought that was Bush League. I don't think you're the Montreal Canadiens. You're supposed to be the pinnacle of all franchises in professional sports. You're supposed to be the classiest of all the franchises. I thought that was Bush League. I don't think that should have happened. You know, everyone knows the hit's dirty. You don't need to Zapruder film it down to break it down, you know, frame by frame. It's a dirty hit. Niskanen deserved more than the one game he got. But I just thought the Canadians came off as a little whiny as an organization, top to bottom.
Yeah,
fair
enough. I absolutely agree. I also think they were getting frustrated with how well Carter Hart was playing.
Sure.
Like, it's undeniable Hart outplayed Price, right? And most goalies can't say that, right? So to me, you know, again, I mean, there's some good stories on this Flyers team. Like, you know, Ivan Provorov scored his first goal, you know, in Game 6. You know, Provorov is a guy that we've talked about with Anthony Sanfilippo, that, like, Provorov is a guy, to me, it's really interesting what's happening here in this year's playoffs, because you have the next wave of great defensemen, and they're all going to be in the second round, right? Sure. So you're talking about Cale Makar,
yeah.
You're talking about Quinn Hughes, and you're talking about Miro Heiskanen,
yeah.
And Ivan Provorov. Those four defensemen, like, that's the next, like, the current wave, right? Like,
yeah.
You've got John Carlson, you've got Victor Hedman, you know, Drew Doughty, like, the... Roman Josi, like, these are the current best defensemen, but to me, like, Hughes, Makar,
it's a coming
Provorov,
out party for the next wave.
Yes, and to me, that was a big story. Provorov, by far, to me, was the best defenseman on either team. Niskanen also, you know, you gotta give the Flyers credit. Niskanen is not a third pairing defenseman. He's a top pairing defenseman. And the Flyers were able to win that game. Obviously, the Habs didn't have Brendan Gallagher, but I just think, going back to what you said.
And Gallagher's a bigger loss than Niskanen.
Oh, absolutely. Gallagher's a great player, but when you look back, you know, at this first round and the qualification round, you know, for the Habs, and Ken Campbell of the Hockey News, you know, had a good piece on this either yesterday or a couple days ago. I mean, Nick Suzuki and Jesperi Kotkaniemi, I mean, that's your future up the middle, right?
Well,
Phil Deneau. I mean, and
that's why Max Domi might be a little expendable.
Yeah, and even though, you know, they use Domi on the wing, I mean, Domi's a guy that, you know, is a capable center as well, but you're absolutely right. Domi's a guy that they might end up moving, but I don't think anybody expected, you know, Suzuki was going up against, you know, Pittsburgh's best centers. He was going up, you know, against Philly's best centers, you know, Sean Couturier. So, I mean, you got to give, you know, Habs a lot of credit. Nobody expected them anywhere.
It makes the Pacioretty trade look a lot better.
Absolutely. So, I mean, there's a lot to be excited for if you're a Canadiens fan, because nobody expected them to be here, right? Like, they were the 24 seed, which is kind of funny, you know, with the 24 cups. But, I mean, I still think it's really impressive that they even got this far.
Well, they certainly, you know, they got further than they ever were going to, because they weren't going to be a playoff team if it wasn't for the global pandemic. I just hope that they maybe take, you know, they go back and they say, you know, we didn't necessarily respect our emblem as well as we should have with some of our comments and with some of our social media antics and some of the, what I'll describe as whining in the course of the series. But a lot to like in Montreal.
And I agree with you, Drew, but, like, to me, I love that stuff, right? Because,
sure.
Like you said, we've always said on this hate Fan show, we love, we, sorry, on this hate, on this show, like, obviously we're talking about good-natured, good hockey hate, but, you know, we love chaos, we love hate. This is the playoffs. Like, you're battling for the Stanley Cup. You should get angry. You should hate losing. So, to me, I love this stuff. You know, when Marc Bergevin and Alain Vigneault and, you know, Gallagher, all these guys are getting into it, that's just showing that, you know, they want to win.
And speaking of the Stanley Cup, there is going to be a new Stanley Cup champion this season after the Canucks eliminated the St. Louis Blues in Game 6 last night. We'll talk about that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.